Hi, I'm Brad Shreve, and you're listening to Game Mystery Podcast, soon to be renamed Queer Writers of Crime. This is the show where I interview LGBTQ authors of mystery, suspense, and thrillers. Justine is also here with her weekly recommendation. Pink's video number 5.
Pink's video number 5.
That's what Marshall and I are going to talk about today.
Oh, good. I really like the Pink's video series. And that one came out on Christmas Day. Quite the holiday treat.
It is.
Do you know how many of them have been nominated for a Lambda and how many of them have won?
I know 2 have won. And he and I couldn't figure out how many had been nominated. He had forgotten.
Yeah. All right. I forgot too. But I knew that you must have talked to him during the interview, but apparently he doesn't know either how many are nominated.
No, we had to discuss at the opening. So anyway, for the folks out there, Justine is in a wildlife refuge.
known as my backyard, because I'm finally getting a warm day in the middle of what's cold for California.
So you'll hear some birds and some dogs barking and maybe hear the sound of deer crossing the lawn. I don't know.
No, we don't get deer because the coyotes will get them.
Okay. So maybe you hear some coyotes.
Oh, yes. Right.
So I'm going to bring up the contest we have going for the reviews.
Okay.
This is a reminder, folks, that if you give our show a review on Apple Podcasts, that you will have a chance to earn a $50 gift card. And the way to do that, if most of our listeners listen on Apple Podcasts. So that's real easy for you to do because you're right there anyway. For those that don't listen on Apple Podcasts, it's really easy. Go to GameMysteryPodcast.com, our website, and there's a button at the top that says rate this show. Click on that button, click on Apple, and it'll bring you to iTunes so you can rate us there, which is the exact same thing as rating us on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been a few days and we haven't gotten any entries. So, you know, there's a good chance you're going to win.
I think people must have made too much money off of Christmas. I may end up mailing the money to myself.
Yeah, that would be fine.
We'll split it between the two of us.
That's good. Yep. First thing we'll do.
So anyway, get those in. We would love to see some. And again, we have a lot of star ratings, which are nice, but it doesn't tell us who wrote the stars. So you have to actually physically write a review for us to be able to tell it was you. So,
right.
And we are in transition phase of our new name.
Now I'm gonna give you a little grief here, Brad, in public and for all the world to see. Last week I had you on tape committed to this was going to be our last name change, and the morning after we taped it, you sent me an email going, "I think I want to change it again," but I talked you out of it. I got you down off the ledge, but I wanted the listeners to know that you were tempted.
Yeah, I actually thought of some other names I could have used this week, but I really like the name I chose. So I won't even bring
it
up.
Well, you know, I got a complaint about the name we chose, though.
What's that?
Well, we were a Gay Mystery Podcast, and then we're becoming Queer Writers of Crime.
Right.
And for the last few days here where it's Gay Mystery Podcast, I can sneak a mystery in that is not a crime. But after this, I'm not going to have any of those mysteries.
I would give you leeway.
Okay.
If it's a mystery, I mean, most mysteries are, generally speaking, most mystery readers want a body. Not, they'll sometimes let that slide, but they generally want a body. But if you have the rare exception that it's a good mystery, we'll let that
I
slide.
Had a rare exception this week, and I was looking at reading it, and I was working on my notes, and I said, uh-oh, there's no crime in here.
I'll give you some leeway on that.
Okay.
Okay. So what do you have for us today?
This is a book by Ulysses Grant Dietz. And most of our listeners will know him because he writes incredibly well-written, well-thought-out reviews and posts them both on Amazon and Goodreads, but then also shares them along on Facebook.
And I gotta say, I was really surprised when you told me that this was a book by Ulysses. I know him from his reviews. I was very happy with the one he gave me. And when you told me you were going to review his book, I was like, he writes books? And I'm very embarrassed.
That's why this one I wanted to slide in, because most everybody reacts like you do.
I'm ashamed that I didn't know, but go ahead.
Okay. So he has written this mystery, another one that's on the line towards MM romance, but it is pulled from his background. Ulysses is a retired museum curator. He's been with his husband for 45 years. They've raised two children. I think their children are around the ages of my children, so late 20s, early 30s. And this book is about young men who meet as museum curators. And they discover a silver bowl. It's come out of the silversmiths of before the Revolutionary War, but it has Hebrew and Arabic writing on it. There's also a little paranormal, because when they touch it, there's, you know, some energy coming off of it.
Well, I know you love paranormal.
I love paranormal. It was a very mild part of this, though. It was really to help you understand some of the other mysteries. There are things that you find out about these two curators that the slight telepathy lets you know where they fit into the history of this bowl. And I'm not going to say anything more than that about that paranormal thing.
Okay.
So they need to figure out where this bowl is. I mean, it's very unusual for there to be a silversmith in Boston who would have used both Hebrew and Arabic words on the bowl. And there are a lot of twists and turns along the way. You meet their families. One of them is mixed race. And his family bought real estate in Harlem. They bought a big house that they had cut up into smaller duplexes, and now they live in a big house. So he is living in Harlem on one of the old mansions up there. And the other curator is living in a Park Avenue apartment. He's a trust fund baby. You get to see different parts of New York. And these curators are both newly hired at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And he not only talks about the exhibits, but mostly he talks about how the curators are working behind the scenes. And I found that most fascinating. That added that, plus the mystery, plus the slight paranormal, which, you know, I like, but I don't think anybody who is opposed to paranormal would mind it in this book. It really hit all my sweet spots. Graham Cheater says you read what you're in the mood for. And this week I was really in the mood for that sort of light, easy mystery.
I'm going to guess your ranking on this. I'm guessing you're going to give it a crackerjack.
No, I'm giving it a delightful.
Oh, delightful. Okay.
Yeah. Crackerjack is like anything that kind of fits into all the categories. And this really, I mean, it didn't really fit into the thrilling category. So I decided really to make that crackerjack.
Okay.
So it hit delightful.
Okay, delightful. What do you have from Recreer Tales?
Recreer Tales has got an exciting year, but we are still on our end of year, beginning of 2021 break. So there's not anything coming out too soon, but you can visit our catalog at recreertales.com.
And let everybody know this is the last transition week. Officially, next week's episode will be Queer Writers of Crime from then on. Logos, everything else. So goodbye to Game Mystery Podcast. But the old episodes will still be here. It's been a good run, and it will continue to be a good run, just under a different veil.
I got to say, when we started in November of 2019, I'm not sure either one of us would expect to have gone this far.
I wasn't sure how far we would go. And I'm glad people like us enough that we're continuing.
That's right. Well, I'm looking forward to listening to your interview with Marshall Thornton, and I'll be back next week.
Okay, I'll see you then. Interact with other crime fiction fans and authors in our Game Mystery Thriller Suspense Fiction group on Facebook. Links are on our website, GameMysteryPodcast.com. My guest today, Marshall Thornton, is a three-time winner of the Lambda Literary Award for Game Mystery. He's been nominated numerous times, more than that. I believe, is it seven, Marshall?
I think it's more.
Okay. So over seven times he's been nominated. He is well-known for long-term Boys Town mysteries, as well as his Pink Video mysteries. In addition, he has written many highly acclaimed standalone novels, including his romantic comedy, Femme, which was a 2016 Lambda finalist for Best Gay Romance. Marshall is also a member of the Mystery Writers of America. Marshall, I want to welcome you to Gay Mystery Podcast / Queer Writers of Crime.
Thank you for having me.
The title is not that long. We're just in a transition phase.
So, Brad, the first thing I'd like to ask is that you promise not to release this tape to the Washington Post.
I promise. Just don't try to encourage me to change votes.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I think I can do that.
So if you don't do that, then I won't submit it to the Washington Post. I have to say, you were one of the authors who helped get this podcast off the ground. You were my guest on episode number 5. And back then, it actually had a totally different name, which was Gay Mystery Authors. And now you're back at number 66. So welcome back.
God.
It's been over a year, well over a year. And I want to begin by saying thank you, Marshall. It's not because of the podcast. I don't know if I've ever really done this. When I was just getting started and found novel writing and everything that comes with it, such as marketing and everything else, to be daunting, overwhelmed is an understatement. And there were many authors who held my hand along the way. And I purposely didn't latch on to one author because I know they don't have the time and I didn't want to be annoying. But you were one of those that really helped me out. And I've got to tell you, I really appreciate you taking your valuable time. And I hope I didn't get on your nerves too much.
Not at all.
I have a question regarding your career. Marshall Thornton is a well-established brand. You've been nominated, we now say, over 7 times for a Lammy. Mm-hmm. And you've won 3 times. Mm-hmm. What does literary success look like to you?
Well, I make a living. Not a big one, but enough that I spend my time writing. And that is really lovely.
You did just build a new house, didn't you?
Oh, God, I have not even started.
Okay, well, it's in the works. It's actually in your head.
I'm supposedly closing the loan in a couple of weeks. You know, I don't make a big living, so I'm getting a government loan. Mm-hmm. That has been a challenge, certainly. And so hopefully we're going to be starting soon.
It's January in Michigan. Are they still able to start this time of year?
They can do some site work. Yeah, they can, you know, it's not a full foundation, it's a crawl space, so they can actually do that. But it's going to be a modular home. It will be built in Indiana.
Oh, okay.
Driven up here probably in May. So they'll do things between now and May to the lot. You know, they'll probably put in the septic field and stuff.
Well, at least they'll get moving. You'll be happy when they start digging up.
And now you have to retitle this episode, This Old House.
Exactly. We're going to talk about your most recent novel, Cash Out, which is the 5th novel in the Pink's Video series. Mm-hmm. Before I do that, though, we're going to go back and we're going to revisit Boys Town.
Okay.
Which is what put you on the map, is my opinion. When you were last on the show, you published book number 12 in Boys Town, and mm-hmm. you were working on 13.
Right.
Where number 13 has been published, and you consider it is done.
Yes.
And I know you broke a lot of hearts by wrapping that series up. How did that experience go in reaction from your fans, and how it's felt for you to move on?
The reaction has been pretty positive. I mean, as always, you know, some people aren't happy. You know, there is some interest in having him come back, and I don't know that I'm going to do that. And if I did, it would not be Boys Town.
Mm-hmm.
Be something else entirely different. So that series is definitely finished.
You were writing back from the 80s, but isn't Chicago, they're morphing Boys Town into some other name?
Oh, well, it always had another name. It was always Lakeview.
Uh-huh.
you know, Boys Town was a colloquial kind of name because there was a lot of, you know, it was where all the guys lived. And I lived there at the time. And now, you know, nobody, you know, it's all straight people because the property values have gone so high. And also, you know, straight people's behavior has changed. You know, the last time I was in Boys Town, I think I saw three or four strollers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I lived there in the 80s, no one would bring up children in that neighborhood. And if you go into Unabridged Books, which has been there for 40 years, they still have a very large gay section, but it's right next to an even larger children's section.
I think I heard that, yes.
You know, the demographics of the neighborhood have changed. I mean, the Gay and Lesbian Center is still in that area. You know, there's still indications of stuff. There are still some bars there. It's not as devastated as like Silver Lake,
mm-hmm.
which is completely gone.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I'll bring.
No, that's okay.
We'll bring it. We'll bring it up. Yeah, and WeHo's going through the same thing. West Hollywood.
Yeah. You know, people attribute this to apps and stuff, which I think is completely wrong.
I agree.
It's real estate values. Queer people used to go into really cheap neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
That, because that's, you know, how they could afford to survive. That's how they could afford to have a business. And so people would then move into those neighborhoods to be near the bars and the bookstores and the businesses. And then, you know, the neighborhood would get better. But, you know, this, we've lost our city centers. They're now, you know, these playgrounds for very wealthy people.
And I agree with you. I don't think it has to do with the apps either. I mean, the apps are great if you just want to get laid. And if that's all you went to the bar for was to get laid, then yeah, they probably lost some of that business. But people still like to dance. They still like to hang out with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And have a few drinks. So that hasn't gone away. So I agree with you. The same thing we're seeing in the Castro, it getting much more gentrified. A lot of people that lived in the Castro are moving to Palm Springs because it's dramatically cheaper.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Palm Springs is very gay now. I think their entire city council identify as LGBT.
Been at least 25% gay in that city for quite a while. And it's probably only gotten more so.
Yeah. I would say it's probably dramatically more so. I love mystery novels, and mm-hmm. I love your Pink's video series. I have a special connection to your protagonist, Noah, and his group of funny friends, because I know that place. I know Silver Lake, and I know those people. And that's why I really connect with your Pink's video series. As we just said, it takes place in Silver Lake. I used to spend a lot of time in Silver Lake, lived there for a short amount of time. And I don't know if you remember, it used to be called the Swish Alps.
You know, I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah. For listeners, it's a hilly part of LA, and it had a relatively large gay population. So it's called the Swish Alps. Nobody, I think, even knows that that's what it was called anymore. But Circus of Books, one of the most famous porn shops, is gone, and it's all the bars have now gone to couples. It's a real mix, straight and gay. So it's a totally different world.
I saw a post recently that Akbar was asking for money because they were the last gay bar in Silver Lake.
I thought there was one more still around. I could be wrong.
Well, that was the claim. So
yeah, well, they become very gentrified. So that's no surprise. So anyway, back to the Boys Town series, and roundabout way that I'm getting to this is Noah Valentine is your protagonist, who I really like because I connect with him. Tell our listeners who Noah Valentine is.
He's a guy about 28 or 29 who owns a gay video store in 1993 in Silver Lake. And he's, you know, had some bad things happen to him and starts accidentally running into dead people a lot, and he and his friends try to figure out why and what happened to them.
I love amateur sleuths that just happen to find bodies everywhere.
Yeah. It's a funny form. I mean, I actually make jokes about it in the books, which is one of the things that I enjoy doing, because it's not it's interesting to write something that's relatively realistic in a basically non-realistic format. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's always struck me as, you know, it would be very odd if they didn't make comments about Murder, She Wrote and didn't make comments about how this is always happening to us. Why?
Yeah. Yeah. They say the murder rate in Cabot Cove is a higher percentage than in El Salvador.
I bet.
One of the, I think it was the BBC that did that calculation. So one thing with the series, though, that why they're so popular is your readers become comfortable. They know the characters. They get a feel for, they know what to expect. Mm-hmm. You did something that I found kind of striking to me, and you had the gang leave Silver Lake and went off to Las Vegas to attend a wedding. This is in your most recent book.
Right.
Do you feel you were taking a risk by putting your characters in a different environment?
Not exactly. You know, one of the tenets of a cozy mystery, and you know, I kind of pushed the boundaries of that, is that it have a contained community. And setting the stories in Silver Lake, even though it sounds like it's not a contained community, you know, when you're looking at a neighborhood and you're looking at a gay community within that neighborhood, it does become much smaller and much more village-like than city-like. And with this book, I mean, I just thought it would be really fun to take them to Las Vegas, and I enjoy Las Vegas and have written about Las Vegas before. And I kind of do the same village thing by keeping them very much around the same casino. And then I'll ask you a question. Did you recognize the casino?
I didn't read this yet.
Oh, you haven't read it yet?
I haven't read it. No.
Okay.
I haven't read Cash Out.
Okay.
But I lived in Vegas for about 3 years. So I probably will recognize it.
Have you read all the Boys Town books?
I'm not going to say no. I haven't read all of them.
Okay. Well, then maybe I should just tell you, maybe or not. I don't know. I used the same casino as I did in Boys Town.
Okay.
A casino in Boys Town 9 called Lucky Days. And this is the casino that they go to get married. And it features quite strongly in the plot of both books.
So they're in the same universe.
You know, they are in an odd way. I mean, the books have very different tones, but then, you know, people's lives have very different tones.
And that's actually interesting that you can do that. How is that switch from Hardboiled with Nick to Pink's video series?
I don't think about it a whole lot, actually. I mean, it's just an attitude, really. You know, Nick is dealing with his circumstances and has a particular background and attitude, and the same is true with Noah. The thing that's similar is they both, you know, as in any story, they start out and, you know, they're presented with a possibility, a client or a situation that they could pursue, and you have to get them to actually pursue it. And then once you're going, I'm not being very clear.
You just do it.
Yeah. It's like, you know, once I get started in Nick's attitude and mode, it kind of stays there. And sometimes I worry that they're not that different. Although they certainly are. There's a lot of things that Noah does that Nick would not do. And I did set them up deliberately to be different.
Yeah.
You know, I chose the circumstances of their lives to be opposite in many ways. Although, as I think about it, in the Boys Town books, friendship becomes increasingly important to Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where Noah doesn't quite start there. You know, it's like he has people who are being good friends to him, but he's not really open to them in the first few books.
Yeah.
And there's a lot he keeps quiet about for different reasons. You know, Nick is also kind of quiet, but, you know, neither of them would really sit down and unburden themselves. But for different reasons, I think.
Probably my listeners are tired of me hearing about Lawrence Block. Lawrence Block is my favorite writer. And he writes the Burglar series, which is madcap and funny. And then he writes the Matthew Scuddy series, which is very dark. And yours isn't that much of an extreme, but I really envy that he can do that and hope I can emulate that. And I see you doing that very well. So good on you.
Thank you. I mean, you know, when you talked about earlier about, you know, being a well-established brand, that's funny to me in a way, because I break rules all the time about what makes a brand. You know, it's like I write mysteries, I write romantic comedies, I write a blend of those things. I've written sci-fi, and I just put all those things out there. And I guess, you know, I mean, it's kind of something I've always done, because when I was a struggling screenwriter, I would go back and forth between thrillers and comedies. So it feels very natural to me, but it's also antithetical to building a brand, because you're supposed to do the same thing.
Maybe that is your brand.
Well, I think at this point I've kind of established that, but, you know, right up front, someone would have said to me, don't do that. No, that's wrong. You know, because, you know, I mean, I'm far enough into it that I think people trust me as a storyteller to go from one to the other. Although I have fans on each side, you know, I do, you know, see people say things like, oh, yeah, this is great, but I love the mysteries, or the mysteries are good, but I really love the comedies, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about fans, I was going to get around to this later, but we talked a little bit about sex when you were on before. Mainly it was in your Boys Town series. The story begins in the 80s, and it was no surprise to me that there was a lot of sex that went on very early in the novels, because it was the beginning of the AIDS crisis. And you told me over time there's been less sex in your novels.
Yes.
To the point that there's very little.
Mm-hmm.
That all being said, there is an assumption, an expectation by many people that any gay novel will have sex, or at least romance. And I've read some of your Goodreads reviews, because I don't want to read my own. not on Goodreads. Actually, I do. But anyway, an example that I see in a lot of your 5-star reviews, people will say, there's no romance in this novel, but da-da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
What are your feelings about that?
I've gotten very used to that. You know, one of the things you need to be successful as an independent writer is opportunities for marketing. And that means that, you know, certain genres are better than others.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways that I found to get my name out there is to work the M/M romance community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because romance readers are not monolithic. They do not only read romance. And, you know, people who like M/M should know about gay fiction as well, and they should be trying it, and many of them do, and I have many, many fans in that world, most of whom kind of understand that my books are different, which is why they write these reviews. It's like, it's not a romance, but read it anyway.
Yeah, well, a lot of your reviews are done on romance websites, and you always get good reviews on those, and they're not. Your book doesn't fit their norm at all. So you're right. People do like to expand beyond. I have this perception, and I think it used to be true, that M/M or male/male novels in the past were clearly defined as romance or erotic. Am I right there?
That's where it started out. I think that, you know, many things have changed in the last decade and many things have not. one of the things that's changed is that there are a lot more men,
mm-hmm,
writing. And that right there starts to change the kinds of stories that are written. And certainly many of the women I know writing M/M are unhappy about being confined within the way the rules were 10 years ago. And so they've pushed the boundaries as well. So there's a lot of flux in what kinds of stories are being put out there. And I would also say that the publishers in this genre have much less control than they did 10 years ago because they keep failing. Consequently, I know of very successful writers who have, for the first time, started self-publishing. That brings a lot more freedom as far as what you can and cannot do.
Yeah, when I first was writing my novel, and I talked to a lot of authors, you and quite a few others, a large number of them I spoke to were leaving publishing houses and going to self-publishing and explained why. And once I talked to enough people, I had no doubt in my mind I was just going to go self-publish for numerous reasons as well. The thing with the sex thing, I know my readers probably think I'm a prude because I bring up this a lot about sex in novels. It's not that I have a judgment about sex or romance in a novel. One of Michael novels that I read not long ago, I think it was Lay Your Sleeping Head.
Right.
It's a damn good mystery, but there is at least one sex scene in there that, damn, it had me sweating. It was good. It was good. So I enjoy it as much as the next person. My concern is that because we're seeing it morph and we're seeing male used, people shelve my novels on Goodreads as being male, which drives me crazy because they're not romance novels. I think what bugs me is it used to be pretty clear what you were getting. And now with the term being used so often, if you're going to look at a mystery novel, is it a mystery novel that has romance in it, or is it a romance novel that has mystery in it? And until you read the book, it's sometimes hard to tell.
Right. A lot of that is marketing, and there's no way to stop writers from viewing things as opportunities when, in fact, they're things that alienate readers. So they're going to classify themselves in any way that they can. And certainly a lot of the people writing M/M and a lot of people reading M/M do not make a distinction between that and gay fiction. So this is, you're classified as M/M because it's a gay mystery.
And there's a very slight romance in it, very little.
Yeah, then they don't see that as being problematic. I mean, certainly I see it as problematic and have since the beginning because many of my first experiences 10 years ago were readers saying things like, this is wrong. This is not done correctly.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is very odd. And it wasn't done correctly because it didn't fit into their very narrow ideas of what an M/M book should be. Now, as I said earlier, I do think that has expanded. And certainly at this point, I'm well known enough that people don't come on and say those things anymore, which is also nice. I think, you know, and certainly I've done several blogs over the years kind of trying to explain to people what's what.
You actually had one title, I Do Not Write Male.
Right.
It was years ago.
Yeah. Right. And then I have a reader who is a fan. And she always teases me because shortly after that, I wrote Femme and was nominated for Best Gay Romance. And, you know, to me, Femme is a romantic comedy, which is slightly different from a romance. And it doesn't really follow the rules of M/M romance or romance in general. But it is, you know, romantic enough that it belongs in that category. And I will do that in the future. But anyway. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, I mean, you have. I have a reviewer on one of the review blogs who fortunately really likes my books, but she classifies them as male. And the first book I asked her, I said, why did you do that? It's not a male novel. And I said, there's the romance is more of a little tease. And she's like, well, I classify any novel as male.
Yeah.
And that shows the new mindset. And what I have to do, and it's hard for me to do, is because you're not the first guest that I've talked to about it. And basically I'm told, get over it. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, and it's not a new mindset. That's a mindset that from 10 years ago, 11 years ago when I started. And, you know, you do have to get over it. You do have to understand that, you know, language doesn't mean the same thing to different people. Luckily, because of the pandemic, my writing group from 15 years ago, we just recently got back together. We're Zooming, and that's actually been really lovely. One of the things that we discussed just yesterday was, what does Midwest mean? You know, because a friend of mine's writing script and she placed it in the Midwest. And it's like, well, Midwest means different things to different people. You know, to me, growing up in the East, it means Western Pennsylvania. To one of my friends, you know, who grew up in Nebraska, it means Nebraska. Now, to me, that's a plain state. So you kind of have to get used to what means one thing to you means something else to someone else.
I grew up as a little kid in Michigan, where you are, and then I also at one point lived in Nebraska, and I considered them both Midwest. But I can definitely see why you would say it was a plain state.
Yeah. So, but I think, you know, you have the same issue when it comes to gay fiction and M/M. And, you know, I'm not really, when I've written about it, it's not so much that I'm trying to correct people. It's just people need to understand that what they're reading so that they don't feel like something's wrong. Calling them the same thing is it's a little problematic, but if it works for you, that's fine.
Well, I probably won't drop the subject, but I'm going to tone it down because I think it was Mark Manise that just said, get over it. So I don't remember exactly who on the show said that specifically.
Well, you don't want to cut yourself off from those readers.
No, I agree. We're going to bring up a controversial decision that you made this year. Mm-hmm. And you did an open letter to Lambda Literary.
Right.
And you posted why you are choosing not to submit a novel this year. For those don't know, what was that about?
Well, they removed the category that I've won 3 times and are doing a joint category for lesbian, gay, transsexual, queer people, which they've done in other categories. They have a history of that. Previously, I was told that they do that when there's not enough entries. However, this is clearly not true with mystery. And their excuse was that they wanted to make it more fair, but they actually made it less fair,
mm-hmm.
are providing much less exposure for mystery writers, which is something I'm always against. You know, so I mean, certainly everyone deserves a category. I mean, there should be a trans category. There should be a bi category. You know, I have not a problem with that in the world. I am concerned that if you lump everybody together, then one of the many things the judges then have to consider is, well, it's been 5 years since a lesbian won, so a lesbian needs to win this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it stops being about the quality of the books and starts being very political. And certainly, you know, I've been to the Lambdas 3 times and it is a very long ceremony, but they don't need to actually give them out every single year. They can have the category, announce the winners, and just give out, you know, certain awards and different years, take turns, you know. I mean, there's all sorts of ways they could have done it. And I just thought it was a very poor decision, one that hurt the entire mystery writing community. My understanding, the only category left which has gay and lesbian choices is romance.
Yeah.
And I'm told that's not going to change ever because that offended people.
Well, yeah, I definitely, they definitely need to be separate categories.
Yeah, but, you know, when you're talking about the Lambdas, you know, I actually thought about this a lot before they made this decision, you know, and if you were judging the gay mystery category, there's many different ways to judge it. I mean, you can judge the books on their literary merit. You can judge the books on how gay they are, or you can judge the books on how well they fit the mystery genre. And I think every volunteer group of judges first has to decide those things. So they're already dealing with a lot. Mm-hmm. Swoop in and say, okay, now you have to also judge them on the merit of which category they fit into and how pissed off are these people going to be if they never win the award, and how angry are these people going to be if they don't win the award for 3 years. And this year, you know, this gay book is really the best, but gay people, you know, gay guys have won for 3 years in a row, so they can't win, you know, and it's just like, that's a nightmare.
Yeah.
And it is expensive to enter that. And it's like, you want my money and you reduced my chances. And, you know, now, I mean, it's certainly, you know, it's always somewhat political, but they just increase the politics.
Well, hey, the Oscars and the Emmys have best actress and best actor. And I would say probably for the very same reason.
Well, yeah.
Okay, we had a woman win for the last 5 years.
I mean, certainly, you know, something like the Oscars, you know, given the way that the world is changing and the way that we're having many more different kinds of characters coming in, they perhaps should occasionally give awards for different genders or different sexualities. You know, it's like, that might be wise for them, but you know, there's all sorts of ways to be sensitive without actually damaging the people you're supposed to be helping.
One of my favorite movies is a lesbian romance movie, and I can't for the life of me think of the name. But only recently are we seeing queer movies becoming good. Somebody may have had a brilliant script, but they just couldn't get the money. Richard Stevenson with Donald Strachey novels. He thinks Chad Allen did a great job as an actor, but he hates the movies. Yeah. Because they were all made on a shoestring budget. I see that changing, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Somehow we've led from books to movies. That was my fault.
You mentioned the Oscars.
Well, I'm going to remind everybody that this is the fifth book in the Pink's video series. I haven't read number 5, but I have read the others, and I highly recommend it. It's a fun series. And my listeners will know, I don't read a lot of the book on this show, especially right now. I'm trying to catch up on some of the old classics. So, but I have such a connection to yours. I enjoy them.
Thank you. I do too.
So the name is Cash Out.
Yes.
Book number 5. And I will have links to it on the show note. Thank you, Marshall.
Well, thank you. It was fun.
Glad I had you back.
Glad to be back.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.